Andrews lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome to this weekend preview edition of the Bison Report radio podcast. I am your host, publisher of the Bison Report, Ross Uglum. We've got a jam-packed show for you guys this weekend. We've got North Dakota State basketball analyst Nate Zastrow ready to break down the Islander Invitational. North Dakota State going out for three games in 3 days in beautiful, beautiful Corpus Christi, Texas. Our guy Brad Jones, lucky enough to be on the call. I talked to Jeff Culhane. I asked him, I got to figure out how to get this Brad Jones gig, because it's a nice gig where you call like three basketball games a year, but they're always in the Bahamas or on the beach. It's nice work if you can get it. So a big shout to Brad Jones, who's down there. Bison Reports Brad Jones doing the call for these three games on the radio. We've linked in the previews how you can stream these games. I think today's game is at 5 o'clock, and the other, the other game times will be in the Bison Report radio previews. A brief run through the news is, obviously that the basketball early recruiting class is in. You know, signing day happened, I believe, on Wednesday. And the other kind of big news is that Derek Tuska accepted a invitation into the East-West Shrine Game. That's the game that Easton Stick played in a year ago. It is the second biggest senior bowl, the senior exhibition of talent for the NFL draft. The Senior Bowl being number one, but the NFLPA East-West Shrine Bowl is definitely a big deal. I mean, there are plenty of guys that get drafted from that game. The Senior Bowl doesn't have huge rosters, so this is a big step forward for a guy that I really do think can play in the league for sure. But right now, what I'm going to do is bring Nate on here in just a second to talk about this basketball signing class, a big signing class, or a relatively big four kids, although one of those we know and most folks know is going to be a walk-on, which would be Grayson Heyman, the guard from Fargo Davies. But the three scholarship kids are all kind of at the one at each position, if you will, now that North Dakota State plays more of a positionless basketball. There are guards, and the guard brought in is Darnell Carter III, who is a Minneapolis area kid that spent the last few years in the Phoenix area and went to Scottsdale Community College, meaning that he was a fighting artichoke for the last 2 years. He'll come in with 3 years to play two. I would assume that there's not going to be a red shirt there. I would guess that DC3 is going to play as the backup one right away and potentially as a starter the year after that. Then you've got wings, and that's what Bowden Skunberg, a high school senior from Jamestown, North Dakota, is. Bowden is absolutely filling it up. He averaged 24 points a game and 8 boards, shooting it at about 50% as a junior. And obviously he'll have his senior season coming up, but that's a recruiting win directly over the University of North Dakota, as is the big man that they took, Grant Nelson, who is a big, a 6'8 big, can shoot it, can work around the rim. He's very much in that Noah Christensen, Rocky Cruiser mold. So those are the three big guys. Talk to me a little bit, Nate, about DC3, and also, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back. I know the coaching staff was excited to have DC3 on campus this past weekend. They love that winning has kind of taken or happened everywhere he's been at. He's a big, stocky, built guard. Doesn't shoot it great from three, it looks like, but that's something that can always be developed through repetition. But he, he uses his body to get in the lane, finishes very well. And I know that they're excited to have a kid like him. Like you said, he should be coming in and playing right away. Backup point guard, I wouldn't be surprised if he starts at the point and you can maybe move Cam off the ball. That seems to be where he succeeds, and he's done really well with kind of playing off to Vinny this year as well, having two kind of playmakers in there. Bolden,
right, because that two spot is Jared Samuelson's right now, and he's going to graduate as well. So it would be interesting to see kind of the shift of how they would handle the point guard duties between Hunter and DC3, and if they have, you know, maybe Jarius Cook take a look, or if Heyman is ready to play a couple minutes a game, or even Bowden Skunberg handle the ball a little bit. That point guard thing next year is going to be intriguing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, but you can never have too many guards and guys that can put the ball in the basket. So I think that's a good problem to have for them. I know Grant Nelson, they're really excited about that kid. He just continues to get better. He had a huge growth spurt early on in his high school days. And I mean, he was a guard, and he's kind of expanding his game. He's able to post up. He's able to play on the perimeter, handle the ball. He shot it really well from three this spring and summer on the AAU circuit. But like you said, they play positionless basketball. It seems that's what the game has gone to. So I think that they're excited about having a kid who's 6'8" athletic and can shoot the three and handle the ball if he needs to. Bolden's a kid. I mean, they went 27-0 at the high school level and won the state championship. That's pretty rare to get everyone's best shot and not lose a game. He can score in a variety of ways. His body seems ready to play right away. It'll be interesting to see if he can find some minutes. But like you said, NDSU does have, for as much as they lose, they still return some guards who have kind of waited their turn and developed in the program a few years. But it'll be interesting to see if he finds some time right away. I think he definitely has the talent to do that. We'll see how he develops and how quick he adjusts to the college game.
Right. And with Skunberg, you've got, you know, three guys basically that play that wing spot, all graduating. Jared Samuelson played a little bit of backup point guard, I think, earlier in his career, but eventually just became the off the ball spot up shooter, which certainly fits his game. And is a player that starts obviously now for North Dakota State. And then you lose Tyson Ward, kind of the heart and soul of the program over the last 2 years. And of course, Chris Quayle, their number one, I think, wing defender right now, as far as guys that come off the bench, you have a ton of playing time there. And yeah, certainly. I think Jarius Cook is going to be a part of that, taking a red shirt right now. And Jackson Notek is going to be a big part of that. But you also need to understand that, you know, when in a tight game, Cook's taking a red shirt right now, and Notek's not actually getting in. They're going with Malik Harden-Hayes, or, you know, more minutes for Quayle. They're dropping Edie down from the four to the three. These aren't guys that have proved it yet. And I'm not saying that Notek and Cook aren't going to be players, because I think they are. But ultimately, it's not like Skunberg is coming in and trying to unseat guys who have played 22 minutes a game and averaged 11 points. He's just part of a competition with other, you know, kind of unproven guys. As far as Nelson's concerned, I think it's just Coach Richmond and his staff really liking what they've been able to do with a guy like Rocky Cruiser. You saw, you know, and Mike Tweet could shoot the corner three. Chris Kading could shoot open jump shots if called upon. But you also saw a lot of the Jordan Auberg type guys like Jordan and Dylan Miller and Spencer Eliason, and even now Tyler Witts, your more traditional five men that just protect the rim, rebound, get offensive rebound putbacks, things of that nature, sometimes dump it into the post, but often not. I think Coach Richmond has really enjoyed his time with Rocky Cruiser, and I think that's really evident in recruiting as far as going after a kid like Noah Christensen. And Noah is, I think, a special case and a guy that, you know, had Gopher interest and had Creighton interest. And if he wasn't so dead set on being a Bison, I think would have had a different recruiting experience altogether. But you see him take a kid like Rocky and succeed. And now with Noah and now with Grant Nelson, you understand what Richmond is valuing in that spot in that four or five instead of 4-3, that big spot. And Grant Nelson is a guy that 6'9", he's listed. If he ever actually, you know, gets to 6'9", he's going to be plenty big for the Summit League. Get with Jason Miller, hang some weight, get some strength on his frame, and they're going to be able to play five out like they do now with, you know, when the starters are in. And it's a big time deal. It really is, because the Summit League is not filled with skilled big men that can rebound and that can defend. It's often one or the other, like a Brandon Gilbeck. You would never have Brandon Gilbeck shoot a three. And obviously Brandon's graduated, but that's the kind of guy I think that you're talking about. But ultimately, a solid class when they had a bunch of guys outgoing. I think they still need to target and successfully recruit a four-year point guard. I think that has to be really priority number one for the class of 2021. I don't think I'm showing anybody any revelations there. I think everybody understands that the program needs their lead guard of the future. Vinny was an excellent Band-Aid. I think DC3 will be one as well, but they need to find their Lawrence Alexander. They need to find their Ben Woodside. And I know those kids don't grow on trees, but they need to find a four-year point guard for sure. And then they'll have, you know, a little more of a one, two, maybe three seniors a year type thing, as opposed to mass exoduses from the program. And I'm interested to see what Heyman does as well. A guy that played with some really good teammates his junior year, didn't put up tremendous numbers, is obviously going to come in as a walk-on. And, you know, as I mentioned, some walk-ons end up like Freddie Newell. Some walk-ons end up like Jared Samuelson. You just never know what happens, you know, what's going to happen when they get on campus. But the one thing that I've heard that I have no time for is that the fact that three of these four kids are from North Dakota is a red flag in recruiting. And it's just not. I mean, it truly is a ridiculous take. Number one, AJ Jacobson and Dexter Werner, if there was a Bison Basketball Hall of Fame, would likely be, you know, members. And beyond that, you just need to watch the kids. I mean, watch Grant Nelson play, watch his talent level, watch Bowden Scunberg and Jamestown in because they're Class A. Just look up the enrollment numbers at Jamestown High School versus a Fargo Davies or a Fargo South or a Bismarck High. I mean, this kid is leading that team to that record is incredibly impressive. And I think needs to be recognized. Just go back through the years and look at Jamestown's record in Class A basketball. It's not great. And a lot of that has to do with the success of Bowden Scunberg. Coach Richmond told me, and I believe him because I've watched these kids play, these guys were targeted by North Dakota State because they can play basketball, not because they're from North Dakota. And I think that shows with Malik Hardin-Hayes, just because it says Minnesota next to his name. I mean, he's a Fargo-Moorhead kid and was so good that he, you know, they couldn't redshirt on a team that brought back basically the entire rotation. And I think the same can be said for Noah Christensen. He lives a 45-minute drive away from campus. And I think he's one of the more skilled recruits that they've got in the last 5 years. Just because he is from around here doesn't diminish that at all. And it's just a really foolish narrative that bugged me a little bit. I think, you know, you've got the preseason number one program defending a Summit League championship and this constant second guessing of Coach Richmond and the staff. I don't get it, but there's my rant for the day, Nate. What do we got coming up this weekend in this 3-day tournament?
Well, tonight we got UT Rio Grande. They're picked to take, I believe it was fourth in their league, in the WAC. And reading some of their team previews, they legitimately, I think, believe that. I mean, most teams should, but they think that they can challenge New Mexico State, who's kind of been the team to beat for the last few years in that conference. They've been a 12-13 seed, potential upset in the tournament type team. But they return a lot. They got the WAC Defensive Player of the Year. Him and Vinny Shahid should have a battle. Javon Levy's his name. He averaged 2.5 steals a game. He was second in the NCAA with that rate. He's a small guard. He'll for sure, I would say, certainly be on Vinny. So that's going to be kind of the matchup to watch tonight. They returned. They won, I believe it was 17 games last year. 2 years ago, they were in the CBI, which NDSU played in a couple of years when I played. Last year, they were in the CIT. So they have made the postseason the last two years. Both teams are kind of struggling shooting the ball, especially from the three-point line. So it'll be interesting to see which team can potentially get hot. But I think NDSU does have more talent, more depth in this one. I hope that they're ready to roll. And sometimes getting away from home usually helps. Second game, Corpus Christi. It's kind of been two different teams that we've seen in their first two games. The first game, they got blown out by Louisiana Tech and shot 4-for-17 from the three. Then they go play SEC Vanderbilt, who is in their first year under Jerry Stackhouse, so they probably don't have quite the roster that he's going to want there. But they lost by five. It was a one-possession game late. Vanderbilt hit free throws at the end. But they're 12-for-23 from the three in that game, so they're kind of living and dying from that three. But they are shooting 40% if you count that 12-for-23. Big thing in that game is Rio Grande is averaging about 20 turnovers a game. So they are struggling taking care of the ball. I think if NDSU defends the three-point line, they should be able to handle that. Corpus Christi hasn't played a bench play. They played one bench player over 10 minutes a game. So they're not going to play deep or have a deep bench. They probably need to because they're playing three games in 3 days. I think that means their bench, they don't think that they can produce like the starting five can. They do have a really good scorer, averaging 18.5 a game through the first two. After that, he's the only one over 10. So stop him, guard the three-point line. They should be able to handle that one. The big matchup that I'm looking forward to as a fan is Stony Brook. They're 24-9 last year. They do have a new coach. They were an NCAA tournament team 3 years ago, 26-7. Obviously, NDSU's athletic director used to be there as well. They were picked third in their conference. They returned two all-conference players from last year, the sixth man of the year and the defensive player of the year. So that they are going to be a tough matchup. Obviously, they're in the conference with Vermont and UMBC, who we all know about. But that matchup will be a fun one. Hopefully, both teams are 2-0 to make that matchup even more intriguing for Bison fans to keep track of. But I believe both teams should be 2-0, but obviously you got to play the game. But that matchup will be fun.
For sure. It's an interesting little tournament. I published the KenPom ratings yesterday. You published the, I believe, the BPI. And North Dakota State is favored to win every game in this tournament. I don't know as though I'm expecting that. I think 2-1 is maybe more likely just because the teams are relatively evenly, balanced. And obviously the Corpus Christi game is a true road game. Not that there's going to be a ton of students there or a huge crowd, but it is a true road game. I think 2-1 or 3-0 would be big time for this holiday tournament. Would certainly go better than last year's holiday tournament, but this is a this is a team that just needs to find its stroke. I mean, I was talking to a buddy this morning kind of complaining about the lack of efficiency from the men's basketball team and in general kind of disappointed in their start, not winning the game down at Kansas State, not looking great against Cal Poly. But this is a team that shot over 45% from the field last year, right around 37% from three, and 78% from the line. And right now they're shooting 43% from the field, 28% from three, and 75% from the line. They're shooting worse in every way with the same kids who spent the entire summer, in the gym. And you would expect that there would be at least a mild improvement from them. And even if not, and they're just going to go back to slashing, 45% from the field, 37% from three, and 77% from the line, it means there's going to be a lot of progression to the mean. They're going to get to their average eventually. How do they do that? By shooting really well. And when is that coming? Well, it could be, I think, honestly, as soon as this weekend. At some point, shots are going to have to start to fall. And that's what Coach Richmond mentioned. If you watch the video on Twitter of him and our friend Brian Sean, and that was exactly what the head coach said. Eventually, these shots are going to fall because they're getting open looks. They missed open looks against both Cal Poly and Kansas State that for guys like Tyson Ward and guys like especially Jared Samuelson, eventually those shots are going to go down.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The good thing is they are getting the open looks. You just got to get some confidence and knock it down. But the big thing is when your shots aren't falling, you got to be able to defend and then get to the free throw line. And I think they've done a great job getting to the line. I think they're shooting about 73, 74% from the line this year. And they've shot a ton more free throws than their opponents. So once those shots start falling, I think that groove is going to come back and they're going to kind of get their swagger back on the offensive end. But like you said, you want to get those percentages up. It is only three games, so I'm not going to hit the panic button on that yet because it is an experienced group. You know they've been in the gym since their game on Monday, getting extra shots up. And like I said earlier, sometimes kind of getting away from everything and listening to everyone talk about it, going on the road and playing with and probably what's going to be a pretty empty gym when you're not playing the host team. It's kind of going to be the energy that you and your team provide. So I think they'll be ready tonight and get that swagger back with their jump shots.
All right, Nate, thanks for your time. All right, now we're going to bring on Bison Report football analyst Trevor Gebhardt. Trevor, how are we doing?
We're doing good, Ross. We had a playoff victory tonight in playoff softball. I know everyone's dying to hear about the Rock Hill, South Carolina. Sure you get... Shameless plug, buddy. Shameless plug.
Yeah.
We have a semifinal appearance next Tuesday. And if we're fortunate enough to play in the championship game, it'll be on Tuesday evening. So anybody that's in the Rock Hill, South Carolina area next Tuesday evening, make sure you hit up Cherry Park at 8:55. You'll see a very, very top-heavy matchup for a softball championship.
Yeah, that's you know the pod has reach if someone shows up for your softball championship. If there's green and gold at the Rock Hill, South Carolina softball championships, that means we've officially made it. That would be
Bison Nation's about championships and winning. I feel the love. I believe in our people. And I can't wait to see everybody there.
Oh, man. Kind of another week, honestly, Trevor. We were very upfront with everybody last week that, you know, this is North Dakota State's favored by 27, potentially without their best defensive player in Jabril Cox. But nobody seems to be really concerned or bent out of shape about that. So we're going to definitely, we're going to break down the game and we'll offer score predictions and things of that nature. But I think what maybe a better use of time, at least right now, would be a little stroll kind of down memory lane. And so that's where we're going to go right now. And I wanted to, because you've got some family friend ties. It's where you're from. And I know you have certainly closer ties to South Dakota State University, but you're a South Dakota kid. And you played, did you play USD four times?
We played them, well, I guess if you count 2010, technically, yes. But I don't think we played them in 2011. We played them in 12, 13, and 14. So for sure, three times.
Yeah, hard to remember when people came in, when your miss a year was with what team and stuff like that. But what are some of your favorite USD memories, because I think I remember the game that was in Sioux Falls, which I would imagine is a little bit special. And then, like you said, you've got the Marlette family and a couple of other, ties to that program and to that university.
So USD as a whole, I know many people are aware, based off my midweek takes for the South Dakota State game, that my dad ran track in Brookings. So did his twin brother. So they both ran track at South Dakota State. Well, my dad's twin brother's daughter, so it'd be my first cousin, she ran track at USD. She was an All-American there, very talented athlete herself. So definitely some family ties at USD. They recruited me heavily, was offered by them. Honestly, probably enjoyed Vermilion more than I did Brookings when I went on visits. But, yeah, certainly some great memories playing against them. Have friends there in the Marlettes, specifically Tim. He was a high school teammate of mine. He was an Elite 45 captain. It's basically the equivalent of North Dakota's Player of the Year in South Dakota. Very fond memory of playing at Howard Wood, which is where I played my high school football games. That was pretty neat because the semifinal game, my senior year of high school, you know, you walk off the field thinking, hey, this is going to be the last time I ever play here. Well, had the good fortune of USD's marketing team making a massive mistake of wanting to choose us to play their football home game in Sioux Falls. Back then, they were trying to do a marketing campaign to attract Sioux Falls kids to go to USD, and for their football game, for whatever reason, they chose to play us. I was very thankful of it because we were on the good side of a 54 to rip game. And that actually started our 33 game win streak and had a pretty good game myself. So that was pretty cool in front of a bunch of friends and family. And then the next year we played them to clinch a Valley title in 2013. I remember doing like sort of a mini trophy presentation on the field. And then 2014, that was pretty neat, because I got to go back and play them at the Dakota Dome, which the last time I would have played in there would have been the state championship game my senior year of high school, which ironically, fun fact for you, Ross, that game was 10 years ago today. So I don't know what happened. My body feels like it aged 20 years and not 10, but certainly great memories playing the home state there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, kind of lost as far as a rivalry is concerned. I don't think anybody would consider USD rivals, but, you know, old NCC opponents. But like I said, kind of get lost in the four-way of the Dakotas there because of the, honestly, the fabricated rivalry between North Dakota State and South Dakota State, something that just had to be made, had to be created. And then the natural geographical rivalry of UND. USD is kind of the redheaded stepchild for North Dakota State. And that, for most of the time, has been the way they've been treated, with, of course, the exception of that win in Fargo in 2015. And, you know, what a gong show that was. But I don't think this is necessarily the podcast to rehash the 2015 loss, but it's interesting because, you know, starting to go back and look at historically things that, you know, we have Bison Report Radio episodes for. You can go back in the archives here. I think we're on about episode 120 or 125, and you can go back to 2015 and listen to what I thought of that loss, which is kind of cool. That's all available for you guys, you know, on Audio Boom or on iTunes or whatever. Pretty darn easy to find. What I want to talk to you now about, though, Trevor, is Senior Week. And it's something that we've really been featuring on Bison Report this week. Today, you're going to have a chance to watch Jackson Brown. Yesterday was Jack Darnell. And I really enjoyed Wednesday's episode of BRTV with Jimmy Kapuris. Jimmy took such an interesting path to get to North Dakota State and has, I think, a good but certainly a different perspective than the, you know, South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota kid that got recruited by NDSU and played 5 years here at North Dakota State. Bouncing around, I think, kind of gave Mr. Kapuris a appreciation for Bison football that players that don't know other programs might not fully have. So I think it was really interesting, and nothing against Jack's episode or against Jackson's, but These seniors did a really good job at talking about what their last year and what their time in Fargo has meant to them. And I think that you guys, the Bison fan, are really going to enjoy that. But let's talk a little bit about that week for you and kind of the culmination of it. And we'll work backwards. What's going through your mind? And I believe it must've been climbing, but what's going through your mind when, one time in your career, you're not introduced as part of the herd, you're introduced as number three, Trevor Gebhardt, and you go out and shake coach's hand?
You really just kind of soak it in as much as possible, because like I talk about my midweek takes, you have 4 to 5 years, whether you redshirt or not, for 10 seconds. And like I mentioned in my midweek takes, again, it's all worth it. And you just want to kind of relish the moment as much as possible. I remember kind of jogging slower than normal, just kind of looking around and kind of doing mental snapshots. I remember hugging Coach Kleiman, and I always wore eye black for every game. And I remember getting eye black on his little windbreaker. And I remember even seeing it after the game, just kind of chuckling to myself, thinking I'll probably remember this for a long time for a really dumb reason. But
So you're why he just wears t-shirts now.
I am the sole reason. I can confirm that. Don't know that definitively, but I guess we'll just roll with it because it sounds cool. I don't know, man. It's a great week. You reflect back about how fast it goes, and you know, at that time and even currently existing, obviously championship runs are kind of the nature of what we do now in Fargo. So your perspective on senior week probably has a little bit different of a weight, just because you know that you have another shot at being in the Fargo Dome, but you still, it's your chance to kind of look back and go, man, I actually really put myself through a lot, but this went by really fast. And you hear it time and time again with the seniors when they get up and give their senior speech throughout the week. Each guy that is a senior gets a chance to get up there, and he gets to say whatever he wants to the team. And a lot of the formats of those are typically the same. A lot of guys thank the coaching staff. They thank specific people. They might tell a story or two, a lot of which are not appropriate for the pod. If you want to know, just ask me. But it's a good time to look back and reflect and then give a message to the young guys about what we're about and reiterating that so they can pass it down to the next group. And I don't know how long the senior speeches have been going on. I'm glad it's a tradition that we do in Fargo, because I think there's something to be said about guys who have been there and done that, and then them giving a genuine message to the guys who will be doing it in a year and 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, etc. And it just keeps going down the line, because you know, we have cool stuff now like the BFPA. We're very fortunate. It's a very close group of guys, and a lot of the stuff that we talk about is very similar. It's just different eras. And that's a sign of the culture. It's a sign of what we're about, how we approach the game, how we approach our life. And that is why that place has been able to have sustained success, is because of traditions and the history as such. So I think it's just a great week overall. And it's pretty cool also knowing that this is not the end all be all, and that this is not my last home game at the Fargo Dome, because there has been classes that have had to do that. And I think that's probably a tougher pill to swallow. So I think being able to know, hey, we're going to have at least one home game at the Fargo Dome, I think that makes it just a little bit more enjoyable too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is something, and it's something I mentioned, like if you go back in the Bison Report Radio archives and listen to the one I did with Darius Shepherd, we talked about that exact dynamic and how odd it is to have a senior week. So even like the best FBS programs, when they run out of the tunnel on senior day, that is it for them, you know, because they're going to the college football playoff or the Rose Bowl or the Camping World Bowl or, you know, whatever. The FCS experience at a good school like North Dakota State is so different. It's such a different thing because you're right. I mean, these guys have earned the right, I think, already to host two games. Even, you know, they're not going to lose out, but they've earned the right to host games in Fargo. And beyond that, you know, likely three more games. And so, no, they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be introduced one at a time during the national semifinal, but at the same time, they're going to get to play on that turf again. And, I do think that that's a really interesting dynamic, and it's something that is definitely part of sort of softening the blow for these kids that have put so much into the program and, don't necessarily have to say goodbye to the field and say goodbye to the fans. They're going to do it, you know, a month later after the bye week and hopefully after 3 weeks of playoffs. Austin Simmons is an interesting dude, and then that's obviously the quarterback for South Dakota. A guy that had impossibly big shoes to fill with Chris Streveler. Streveler was a guy that, you know, Minnesota could never really figure out how to use him correctly, but was just a top end athlete for the quarterback position at FCS. I called him FCS Tebow while he was there. He's still doing like designed run stuff as a quarterback in the Canadian Football League. They've kind of got a throwing, I think he's with the Blue Bombers. I don't know. It doesn't matter, but they've got kind of a throwing quarterback, and then he comes in and does some of the run stuff. He was awesome, and Austin Simmons took over for him, and I believe, don't quote me on this, but I would believe that Simmons is likely done. I think the kid's a senior. If not, it just seems like he's been there for that long. Yeah, he is a senior. Austin Simmons is a senior. So this is his last go-round, and I don't know what, you know, and Trev, maybe you can kind of offer your take. I don't know how you'd feel about Austin Simmons' career. I don't think that, you know, the kid has probably not achieved what he wanted to, wins and losses wise. Statistically, it's, you know, it's been, I would say, okay. 50 touchdowns to 21 interceptions is not a darn thing wrong with that. 6.9 a throw, 7.3 a throw this year. It's not necessarily elite, but there's not a whole heck of a lot wrong with that either. He's been a stat sheet stuffer for his part, but ultimately, I just, after the Streveler era and where it looked like Bob Nielsen had that program going, I don't know as though you can feel great about Austin Simmons' work as a whole. I don't know. It's interesting. What do you think, Trey?
He's it's tough because, like you said, and basically started this off with, he's filling the shoes of a guy named Chris Streveler, who is, I guess, I don't know if he was for sure or not, but was he on the top five of that Valley top five 35 years list? You know,
the quarterbacks, I doubt it, just because I think Brock and Carson and Easton and Kurt Warner were all
and
on that
Taron
list.
Christian, I don't
think
was
he was the
one,
fifth
yep.
one.
So
yeah, so no. Well, and you got to remember too, it's not like Streveler spent his whole career right in the Valley, which is, I think, probably hurts him in that voting. I didn't vote for him. I had a vote in that top 35, and I did not vote for Streveler. I'm almost certain I voted for the five that ended up being the five, yeah, which hasn't been the case. Just so everybody knows, that hasn't been the case for every position.
I mean, yeah, no, if you play 2 years, I mean, that's a tough list to crack. You've had a lot of great athletes play that position in the Valley throughout the years, but you got a guy who's, I mean, not extremely highly touted. He's from Council Bluffs, has a traditionally a good football lineage, but you're filling the shoes of a guy that is, he was the Walter Payton Award winner in my eyes. That was a bigger rob than Easton. Let's not get on a tangent because we'll just both get angry. He's got a 65% completion percentage. He's got a, you know, basically a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio this year. It's not bad. He's doing his job. He's not going to will his team to victory by any means in a game like this. But then again, we've said that before, aka 2015. He's got about 50 rush yards per game. He's not a bad player, but he's not a guy that I think probably lived up to what, like you said, what you would kind of want to see out of him or what his potential could be. And it's for a various amount of circumstances. I don't know if it's the guys that he's been around. I mean, shoot, he's had a few games this year where he's had a completion percentage in the 70s. He's thrown for multiple touchdowns every game this year besides two. You know, so there are things that you can look at this kid and see flashes of, hey, he's pretty good. But, you know, to say a guy like that would start at a North Dakota State or South Dakota State, I think that'd be tough. I don't think it's going to be a deal where he's got it in him to throw for three bills and four touchdowns. He's not throwing for 537 like he did against Houston Baptist earlier this year. So, I don't know, kind of middle of the road, kind of in that maybe on the higher side of the middle of the road type talent.
Yeah, and his number one guy, and honestly, this is pretty spread out. The USD is they're throwing it more than NDSU is, but they're not throwing it a ton more than a South Dakota State or an Indy. I mean, they're kind of following that type of blueprint in the sense that, you know, they ran the ball 401 times and only thrown it 242. So they're not quite at 2-to-1 run to pass, but they're close. And Kai Henry gets a ton of carries, but Simmons runs the ball a lot at 4.2 a carry. I'm not sure at 4.2 a carry I would call you a big time dual threat, if you will, but you're capable, you know, especially when I would guess that some of those yards lost are via sack. That, you know, that would be my guess. So I would guess on designed runs he's a little bit better off. But the passing, the receiving is pretty spread out. You've got six different athletes with at least 20 catches. But the guy, if you will, is Caleb Vander Esch. A lot of folks will hear that name as you did and think of his cousin Leighton. Leighton Vander Esch was a first round pick of the Dallas Cowboys. He of the Boise State Broncos. Folks will remember him for being a big old linebacker, kind of wearing that cowboy collar, like a lot of Zach Thomas and some more famous linebackers did in the 90s and early 2000s. But Caleb is leading USD among qualified recipients at 14.5 a catch. He's averaging 63 yards a game. He's got six touchdowns, but you know he's not a dominant guy. He's not like Isaiah Weston. Isaiah Weston had a huge height advantage. I think Vander Esch is about your size. You know, 6 foot, 6 foot one. Somewhere in that 185-ish range. He's not a monster, and that's really been the guys that have given North Dakota State trouble, especially when you have corners that are a little bit smaller. They don't now. You know, Bridges isn't huge. Hayes is big for a corner, but he's not going to just, you know, moss people in the way that, like, Isaiah Weston did this year or like Jake Winicky used to. He's just a good route runner. He's tough as nails. And does a good job kind of in between the hashes, making plays either from the outside or from the slot. I've seen a lot from Caleb Vander Esch that I like. I just don't know if I see him dominating the game. And that is, I think, what we always talk about, right, is they need a dude. And I know that dude isn't Austin Simmons. I know that dude isn't Kai Henry. Can that dude be Caleb Vander Esch? Can he rise to that level? I don't buy it. What have you seen from Caleb, and what is your kind of suggestion or whatever for how they plan on taking care of this kid without, you know, like I said, they don't have a major size mismatch,
right? I mean, he's 6'1", 200, a little bit bigger than me when I played. My last couple years I was around that 192 to 197 range, give or take the week and how much Coach Kramer liked me that week. it's simple for me. Just beat him up. He's not used to a Code Green type defense, and I think you just get in his face and press him. I don't think he's a world beater. I don't think he's going to beat you over the top. So I think you just get in his face and beat him at what he does best, which is just get open in little spots. Fairly physical kid, strong kid, smart kid, but he's not an athletic world beater by any means. So I think you just you throw punches at him all day, and he's going to get his because he's going to get his targets. I mean, he's not going to have 200 yards receiving or 100, barring broken coverage about two or three different times. So I think you just get physical with him on the first 5 yards and make him earn every yard that he gets. Because if you do that, the rest will take care of itself. They'll get to the quarterback is what I'm trying to get at. The guys will get to the quarterback and there'll be coverage sacks all day.
Yeah, it could be a big day against the South Dakota school for the South Dakota kids again. Wagey and Tuska, both, I think, could probably get after it. In this one, I think you're exactly right. South Dakota sits at 4-6 right now. One of those losses, though, is to Oklahoma. they also, as you mentioned, lost 52-53 to Houston Baptist. I don't think, though, even with a win over North Dakota State and then a win in Berm over South Dakota State to get to 6-6, even with a win over the Bison, I don't think that USD would get into the field at 6-6. Maybe as a special case, just because of finishing, you know, win over Youngstown, win over NDSU, win over SDSU. But I got to think their season's over. I really do believe that, especially as 27-point favorites. Trev, you've played in a couple of these games where whether it's the last or the second to last game of the season, and you have played against teams whose season is over. What is USD playing for, and what does or doesn't make a team in their position dangerous?
So, I mean, 6-6 would be very, very tough. If they won out, you have an FBS loss. I don't know where Houston Baptist sits at. For the time being, record-wise, I feel like they're having a better year than normal. I think the committee would talk about it if they won out, to be honest with you. I definitely think it would warrant conversation because they would finish 5-3 in the Valley. That would put them in the top half. And I think the Valley's getting 4 or 5. But
yeah, you'd have to talk about it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it'll depend on what Southern Illinois does, which, again, I talk about my midweek takes, and I think that warrants a good read. If you haven't, and another shameless plug this week for a VIP subscription, because that is a wild, wild scenario of what I have with Southern Illinois and South Dakota State there. So I think they do have something to play for. I know that's probably what they're being told in their locker room is, hey, we went out, we give ourselves a shot. And that means they can play with anybody if they win those two games. For their unfortunate sake, even if they did accomplish such a feat, I think their first round matchup would be probably against like a San Diego, and if you win that, you get another date in the Fargo Dome. So good luck doing that twice.
Yeah, regionalization.
Right? Anyway, tangent aside, the most they have to play for, to be honest with you, is next week with South Dakota State and Vermilion. I personally think they're probably looking more forward to that than this game because the writing's on the wall. I mean, it's human nature to look at this and go, hey, even if we played our best game, our likelihood of winning this game is pretty much zero. And next week you have your in-state rival who's not playing that well, who's going to be coming off possibly another loss. And they are going to be battling for a playoff position. And if you're South Dakota and South Dakota State loses to Northern Iowa this week in Brookings, you can potentially take out your biggest rival out of the playoffs with a win. That is possible. As crazy as that is, and as wild as having game day in Brookings and them being ranked number 3 and tied with NDSU late in the game in the fourth quarter, if South Dakota State loses out, that is a possibility of them not making the playoff. I don't know if the committee would leave them out, even if they did lose out, but they're finishing at 4-4, if that's the case. And Southern Illinois finishing 1-1 finishes 5-3 in the Valley. That puts South Dakota State 5th in the Valley. And does the committee value head-to-head more of them beating Southern Illinois? Or do they value where you finish in your conference race more? Because you're going to have NDSU, of course. You're going to have Northern Iowa and Illinois State. They're in. That leaves Southern Illinois and South Dakota State. So, to me, you got a South Dakota team coming to Fargo who's looking at that, and I'm sure they're talking about it the same way we are, going, we might be able to put them out of the playoff. Just maybe. And if they have that satisfaction for a year of beating their biggest in-state rival and doing that in the process, I think that would make their season more than anything, which means they're more than likely not looking at this game in Fargo as their Super Bowl. So they kind of have something to play for, but I think their biggest goal this year at this point is going to be knocking off South Dakota State more than anything.
Yeah, I mentioned that. I mentioned that on Bison 1660's air today, that what a turn, what a terrible turn of events for South Dakota State. You have game day. Trevor, you and I are standing right there. Demetri Williams throws an interception on a trick play. You have the ball. You're tied with Big Brother. You're tied with the number one team in the country in your house. Game day's there. And nothing could have possibly gone worse from that point in your season. You lose a game. Adam Cofield takes, you know, fourth and inches to the crib. Then you find out your quarterback's done for the year. Then you drop a game that you probably shouldn't to Illinois State. Now you have a chance to, I mean, lose to UNI and have to win in the Dakota Dome to extend your season. They went, they were so close to having everything they ever wanted to now just kind of, in my opinion, being on full-on damage control, which I know doesn't break your heart, but it sure is a striking difference. All right, man, I think we've gone on long enough here. Let's hit the good people with our score predictions. Go ahead, Trev.
Last week I told the people I was going to nail it, and based off the two-point conversion right away, and not getting it, I thought I was going to just absolutely nail it because I think I had something like 48, which means we would have missed 1 point if you multiply by 7 through. I was very confident in it. I was disappointed I didn't nail that pick. Granted, we got 50 points scored again, and I think for the first time in North Dakota State's history, we're going to score 50 points for the third time in a row. And I have the ever common score of 53-15.
That's kind of a wild one. Yeah, I said, and I'm going to stick with it, I'm a little bit lower scoring this week. I think they want to get A, I think they want to get seniors that maybe aren't week in, week out contributors. I think they want to let them play. I think they'll go to the twos a little earlier. I think you're looking at 38. I think I said 38-7 if Jabril Cox plays, 38-10 if he doesn't. But that's about where I'm at. That's about where I'm at. Trev, thanks so much for your time this week. And folks, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it, especially if you've made it this far into the podcast with us. Guys, the number one way that you can support Trevor and I in this venture is to become a VIP member over at the Bison Report. We just got done running a fantastic special over there, but just because it's done, you know, don't fret, don't freak out. It's still a fantastic value if you go with either the monthly option or the annual option. Once, if you're not involved in a promo, which obviously the 2 months for a dollar would have been, then you have access to the commercial-free version of CBS All Access. It's great for cord cutters. It's great for Star Trek fans. It's great for folks that want to go back into the archives of stuff that CBS has that isn't on Hulu or Netflix. And not only that, it's the fancy pants version. It's the commercial-free version. It's a $99 annual value. Free of charge to VIP members at Bison Report. You get access to the entire 24/7 sports network. So if you're a Vikings fan, Viking Update, you can come follow our stuff at Packer Report. You can keep up with Coach Klieman over at Go Power Cat or Ohio State, North Carolina, Alabama, wherever your major college football interests may be. We've got that covered via a Bison Report membership. All right, guys, we want to thank you one last time for listening. And this weekend and always, go Bison.